Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly, and joining me is Roger Eric Tinch, online and digital media for Drafthouse Cinema. Thanks Hello. For being here.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. And we have a big, serious, weighty topic to talk about this time, which is the works of Paul Thomas Anderson.
This is going to be a two-part, two-hour
Yeah, exactly. Podcast, right? Well, in order to match up to what the subject, I think we really need to do that. You know, maybe we need to chop it up and put it out of order or something
yes,
like 70 that.
70-millimeter audio.
Yes.
If that exists.
So, right. So Paul Thomas Anderson has a new movie out called The Master with Joaquin Phoenix, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Amy Adams. It's been getting a lot of serious attention, I think, definite awards buzz at this point. Picked up some awards at the Venice Film Festival, and was it playing at Toronto as well, I think?
Yes, I played at Toronto.
Right. Yeah, so it's definitely gotten a lot of critical attention lately. And I think both of us, coming out of this movie, the immediate reaction is sort of, you need more time. It's something, it's hard to have a very, like, instantaneous response to this movie. And I don't know if I think you'd seem like you felt the same way.
That yeah, I
it
think
takes time.
I think if you have an instantaneous response to this, you're doing it wrong. It's definitely one of those films that, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about whether it was good or bad, but it definitely, you know, has some weight to it that, like, after it's done, whether you liked it or not, you're still sort of struggling, I think, even with that, but as well as, like, what is it trying to say?
Right.
There's a lot of that sort of happening, which I think in that instance, that's what I really love about it. It's a difficult and challenging film, which
right.
is great. I mean, I love those types of things, and he manages to accomplish that, maybe to a frustrating degree.
I think you're right. Yeah. So. I mean, I think I agree that I appreciate movies that are challenging, that you come out of them thinking, wow, I need some time to process. Like, this actually gave me a lot to consider, rather than like, wow, that was a cool explosion or something like that.
Yep.
I think over time, reflecting on it, I don't know that I necessarily thought it succeeded in a lot of what it was trying to do. And I think maybe part of the fact that you come out thinking, what is this accomplishing, is maybe some of the problem, because it's really hard to grasp this
yeah.
movie.
And exactly. I think the fact that we're even, you know, when the film was done, that we're mulling more over, did we like it?
Right.
Is that a success? I mean, is that a successful movie where you have to sit with and go, did I like that?
Right.
Like, that is a weird thing to sort of, you know, battle with. But another thing, too, is, like, if this was done by any other director, I think we might have had a more instant response to whether it was good or bad.
Yeah, but, I think you're right.
It being Paul Thomas Anderson, you kind of – there's a respect there. You have to go, okay, what was his intentions here? And that's the thing where I really feel separating the flaws from this movie, from its intentions, is a difficult thing to do, because a lot of the things that we – at least that I had problems with, and I've seen other people have problems with, is the second half of the film.
Yeah.
Right? Where it kind of – meanders.
It does meander a lot. And there's a lot of repetitiveness repetition, which is a better word, to this. I think, well, what the movie's about, because we haven't really mentioned that at this point, it's loosely based on Scientology, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character loosely based on L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology. And so it takes place in the early 1950s, in the early days of this religion, which in the movie is called The Cause. Mm-hmm. And Joaquin Phoenix plays a character who I don't believe is based on any real historical person.
Tom Cruise, maybe?
Yeah. A sort of weird, eccentric drifter. He's a
functioning alcoholic.
Yes, yeah. He's a World War II veteran, comes home, and he's got a lot of violent tendencies. He's very sexually aggressive, very volatile guy, and he sort of literally stumbles into the world of this religion, and is taken in by Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, who is called the Master. So I think, because it's about this religion or cult, if you want to call it that, and the way that they, what they call processing in the movie, where they ask a lot of these repetitive questions and kind of ground down people's will in a way. It seemed to me that the repetitive nature of some of the scenes was almost mirroring the way that the religion,
Yeah, and, you know, for me, as far as the religion, I never felt like I truly, like it was a real world religion, right? It felt very surface to me.
Yeah.
Part of the philosophy behind the cause is, relates to past lives.
Right.
Like where our spirit has,
has
come from millions and millions of years ago. You kind of get a touch of that in some scenes, but you never really get a grasp of like anything deeper than that. Yeah. It kind of felt like a sci-fi-ish, which Scientology is.
Right.
But in this film, it's such a surface thing that I'm not sure, maybe, we're not supposed to be enraptured by Dodd, but it would have been great if we were, if the religion had some sort of, thread of, I could see maybe me believing that.
It is, it is a little hard to understand, I guess, at times why these people are so involved. I mean, I think in a weird way, it's easier to understand why Joaquin Phoenix's character is so involved, because he's clearly such a screwed up guy that he's going to kind of grasp onto anything. But there are so many other followers in the movie, a lot of whom seem like more grounded, normal people. Mm-hmm. It is definitely hard to understand. I mean, one of the things that I thought was kind of a wasted opportunity in this movie was Jesse Plemons plays Dodd's, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, and gets only a handful of lines. And there's one point where he tells Joaquin Phoenix, oh, he's making it all up. And I thought, oh, this is going to open up something, some sort of conflict here, and it just never happens.
And that's part of the problem with the way that, PTA tells a story, is that he sets up a lot, whether it's in the first half or sets up a lot in that scene that you just described, but there's no payoff. There's no, resonance to what was set up before. And once again, I come back to, was that his intention? Because he's obviously he's a masterful filmmaker. So for him not to pay off any of these things that he sets up, it's hard to go, oh, he wasn't aware of not closing that loop.
Right.
Right? So that's the frustrating part of it.
Definitely. Yes.
And that's why I keep battling with if it's a good or bad, how did I feel about it, is those sorts of thoughts where, you talk about scenes, or you talk about, the first and second half, and how they're two different. Like the first half, I feel, is a masterpiece. The first half of the movie is a masterpiece, and I think, the main actors involved, Joaquin Phoenix for sure, Oscar nomination. He totally lives and inhabits that character.
He does a lot of acting in this movie, and I think he's a very good actor. And I think you're right that there's a very good chance he'll get an Oscar nomination. I think it's also, though, the kind of performance where you are always aware of the fact that he's doing stuff, that he's acting, and I think that can be distracting in a way.
It gets tiresome too.
Yeah.
By his 10th explosive, aggression and anger, I kind of felt, okay, we kind of get it.
But, right.
And that's another thing too. There's no arc to that. He never changes, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character never changes. There's they start off as these terrible people, maybe become likable, or the reverse. There's no development, a little bit obviously in their relationship, but as individuals, neither one of them change each other.
Right.
Or the cause doesn't really, the cause coming into Joaquin Phoenix's life doesn't change him, only maybe as a tool, later on in the film, how he sort of takes it and uses it, outside.
Right, but he just uses it kind of to the same purpose that he was doing other things. And there's a scene, the last or the second to last scene, where he kind of uses one of the questions or one of the techniques from the cause, and you can see that he's clearly learned nothing, because he's using it in the same way where he's kind of picking up women as he did at the very beginning of the movie. And I mean, I do think that's probably part of the point, that these guys haven't learned anything, that this idea, this big movement or whatever, doesn't change their lives in a positive way. But I also think that even if we can look at this movie and say all of these things that were frustrating or annoying or that seemed unsuccessful were intentional, that doesn't change the fact that they were still frustrating or annoying or seemed unsuccessful, and maybe the intentions didn't necessarily get what they were after.
Yeah, and you know, I've been thinking about it since we've watched it, and I've been thinking about what's the disconnect here? What is it about this film where you sort of lose interest and really the emotional pull? Once you hit the second half and PTA starts kind of using, you know, the sense of repetition, you know, the scenes of they call processing where,
right,
you know, they put people through, you know, a barrage of questions, and there's other parts of their processing where Joaquin Phoenix is walking from one side of the room to the other.
I thought that was
side.
Never going to end.
Yeah, exactly. It felt really repetitious, and I think there is that you start to lose any, like, emotional, you know, pull that you set up in that first half, and that's what makes the first half so good, and it starts sort of, you know, separating from there. So in that instance, I would say it most likely is somewhat of a failure in that you do lose interest in the characters, which a film should, you know, any successful film should be able to do that, whether it's, you know, the White Girls, the Wayans movies, or The Godfather. You should feel some sort of investment in,
yeah,
the characters.
I agree.
And once you lose that, something's wrong. You know,
yeah,
something is disconnecting.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think we don't have to like the characters, but we have to at least want to keep watching what happens to them.
Yep.
And yeah, I do think that loses it. And ultimately, I think this movie overall, I mean, not that I wouldn't recommend seeing it because it's a big, important event, and there's a lot of really impressive filmmaking craft to it, but I think overall it doesn't succeed.
Yeah, but I think it's worth, and maybe this is what you're kind of saying, it's definitely worth the struggle and difficulty to,
yeah,
watch it. It does. It works out a lot of kinks in the brain, you know, especially if you watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
That's the fun part of it.
Yeah.
It's just coming out of it. The
right.
sense of satisfaction is not there, but you know, I keep coming back. Is that PTA's intention? Are you not supposed to be,
yeah,
satisfied? You
I
know?
Mean, like, I think that's fine, but I feel like I've come out of movies where I think I don't really understand everything that went on in this movie, or I don't really know entirely how I feel, but I still feel like I liked it or I valued the experience or whatever. And this was a movie where I came out feeling like I've missed something.
Yeah.
Something passed me by with this movie. And that was kind of, honestly, how I felt about There Will Be Blood as well, which I remember going to see a second time thinking, so many people think this movie is so brilliant that I seem to have lost, I have missed something here, and I'm gonna try my best to get it. And I just felt like I never did. And I feel like if I went and saw this movie again, it would be the same thing. It would be that same struggle, and I would come out still thinking like it's not quite there.
I do feel like this is a little bit more divisive than There Will Be Blood, because I'm,
yeah,
the same. I'm on the same train with you as far as There Will Be Blood. I love the movie up until that third act, and after that, I felt it just completely fell flat,
right,
on its face. You know, once again, talking about setting up, you know, characters that you invest in, that third act has such a huge jump in time that the actor that portrayed the little boy and you kind of have a connection with is a totally different actor.
Right.
Who's not as good as a little kid was, so you kind of instantly are starting from you know, level zero again and try to build up that connection. But literally, the movie is like, you know, 20 minutes away from the ending at that point. So
right.
It's hard to regain that.
Right.
So no, I'm with you on There Will Be Blood. I totally felt, you know, like, yeah, just confused, I guess, by what is it? I mean, the first two acts are amazing. You know, the 15-minute opening where there's no dialogue is,
right,
is stupendous, but it definitely breaks down towards that finish line.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think maybe that's part of that he kind of has a lot of ideas and a lot of images and a lot of things that he kind of throws at you and then has trouble holding it all together from a narrative standpoint. And in a weird way, I mean, this movie, The Master, has less narrative than any movie that he's made before. And I wonder if he's just moving more and more to like a Terrence Malick level, where we'll get to a point where his movies are just a bunch of images and, you know, no dialogue or something like that, and a really weird score from Johnny Greenwood or,
yeah,
something.
No, I mean, you know, all of his films are about, you know, characters reinventing themselves, right?
Yeah.
And it felt like he was almost taking his own advice and reinventing himself as a filmmaker with this. Because the Scorsese, like, you know, frenetic, you know, dolly shots from Boogie Nights or even Punch Drunk Love, all that sort of manic energy from There Will Be Blood to this film, you can tell he's a much different filmmaker. He's slowing it down
right
a little bit. And I kind of liked that old ETA from Boogie Nights and, you know.
No, I agree.
Magnolia to
yeah.
a certain degree.
I mean, I definitely like his earlier movies more. And to me, it seemed like there was a big breaking point between Punch Drunk Love and There Will Be Blood, where those early movies, even though they are ambitious, they're telling kind of smaller character-based stories. I mean, even Magnolia, you can kind of chop up into these smaller, more grounded stories, I think, whereas you jump up to There Will Be Blood and The Master, even though, I mean, you could argue that this is a character-driven movie, it just feels very large. It feels like it's trying to reach for the heavens, I think. And it's impressive on a filmmaking standpoint. I mean, there were a couple of times. There's one shot early in the movie that takes place in a department store where Joaquin Phoenix is working as a photographer, and he's got this sort of girlfriend. And it's a single shot that goes kind of weaves around the store. And it's not super showy, but I was sitting there thinking, this, like, just the choreography of this is amazing.
Yeah.
And so he's really got that down. I think thematically, though, he's maybe reaching beyond where he can get.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird choice to shoot 70 millimeter, because it's definitely something that's used for, you know, grand wide shots for epic films.
Right.
But he chooses to use it on a film that's very, it's very small. I mean, it's basically about two characters.
Right.
And it's just such a, I don't know, I just think it was like an interesting choice, because you go in expecting all this talk about 70 millimeter and this old school way of shooting, you know, how they used to shoot all the grand epics back in the, you know, 60s and you know, 70s.
Right, like it's going to be Lawrence of Arabia or something.
Yeah, but it's this really actually small character study.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I really don't know what that says about his choice.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just an interesting sort of thing when you're going into it, what you're set up to expect, or at least what I was set up to expect, and then what I was sort of delivered with a much different film, much smaller film than what, you know, his shooting technique was usually used for. So there's a lot, yeah, there's a lot of like little things like that as you go in, you know, to The Master from his previous works, or these choices that you wouldn't have seen a young PTA make.
And right.
There's actually a famous quote where he says, you know, from his first movie till about there, you know, till about just after Punch Drunk Love, he fought for every B+ idea he had.
Yeah.
And he stopped doing that and actually listening to people after Punch Drunk Love, you know? And so it's like, what does that say? You know, he's an older filmmaker. He's what, like 42, 43 now.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that old, though. I mean, he's not.
From where he started, I guess.
Sure.
It's
I mean, he's certainly he's matured, right, yeah. over time. Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely matured. So it's curious to think about how he used to fight for his ideas, the sort of young PTA.
Yeah.
He fought for his ideas. How the young PTA made Magnolia, which, you know, no studio in the right mind would have given Final Cut to him if they saw what he was going to deliver. And, you know, to There Will Be Blood and this film. And the fact that there's been about 5 years.
Right. I mean, but this is a movie, too, that he fought for. I mean, this was a movie that was in danger. I mean, I think part of the reason that it took so long is because the funding fell through and things didn't come together. I mean, this is definitely, I think, a movie that he put a lot of passion into and didn't give up on because he felt very strongly about making this movie.
True.
So
I do wonder, though, how much longer it could have been, you know?
Wait, we were discussing this, and I don't agree. I don't feel like it could have been any longer.
There's so much footage. Like, they, you know, up until sort of the marketing for this, the release of this, as they were marketing it, they were, like, releasing, like, two-minute, one-minute clips here and there. None of that is in this final film.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, giving a little bit more breathing room, you know, taking what probably is a three-hour movie down to 2 hours and 17 minutes, does that affect the cohesion of what this truly could be, in that you sort of give a little bit more glue between.
I guess. I mean, I just feel like, you know, stuff like the repetition is something that you're not going to, I mean, there was so much of that. It didn't feel like there was something missing.
Like,
I mean,
exactly. Like, he's not trying to add filler there.
No. I mean, that's deliberately like a lot of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, you may be right. Certainly if there's more footage, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a longer cut that he wanted to release. But it's possible. I mean, we'll see, I suppose, down the road if there ends up being some sort of director's cut that comes out on DVD.
He's made no qualms about it, though.
So yeah, I haven't heard a single word about there being a difficulty with that.
It's just like that, you know, immediately after that screening, the first thing I thought about was like, that second half, man, has such problems with it. And it's because it feels like it jumps around. And it does.
It
jumps from location and time to you basically, within context, you're sort of at a loss about exactly where, what point in his life is he?
Right.
Right? So that was the other sort of adding to the mounting.
It is disorienting, yeah. But again, I think that may be part of the point, even if it doesn't succeed. So what would you say is your favorite PTA movie then?
I think without a doubt, Punch Drunk Love.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's him, you know, going on all gears. He actually wrote for SNL, I think, for like a season.
Did he really?
I didn't even know that. Hone sort of his comedic.
It's not funny, though.
And it's not, which is hilarious to me because he really worked, worked the sort of writer's room to understand comedy a little bit more than, you know, having Adam Sandler, which I think is Adam Sandler's like best role.
Yeah.
And the fact that to me, Punch Drunk Love is a science fiction movie, it really is. Like if you look at the little touches, like if you revisit it and you notice there's scenes where they're like running away from people and there's like glints of light sort of dashing across.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And there's that sound. There's this sound, like a chime.
Yeah.
Well,
the whole soundtrack is full of kind of those weird sounds.
Weird, quirky sounds.
Yeah.
And it always spoke science fiction to me.
Huh.
So I think there's this, if you revisit it, and I think this is why I love it so much, there could be a level where either Adam Sandler's an alien or he's, no, this is, I know, it's weird, but you really,
you'll
see it. There's a subtext about other beings outside of the frame of the movie.
All right.
You have those, the color montages between different cuts.
Right.
Like that on top of the soundtrack, on top of those, the weird lights.
Yeah,
and choices. It speaks science fiction to me.
All right. I guess I didn't. I mean, it's been a while since I saw it, and I remember feeling that, like, those were just sort of visual representations of kind of the overwhelming nature of their relationship and their romance. But I suppose I could, try and revisit it in that in that context. I don't know. For me, I think the reason that I can't get into that movie is Adam Sandler, is that regardless of the material, I just can't stand the guy. I don't ever believe any of his performances. And even though you're right that this is maybe his best performance and certainly some of the best material that he's worked with, I just can't ever get past his sort of Adam Sandler-ness. And that just stops me up no matter what kind of role he's playing. So, I mean, again, I haven't seen that in a while. I think probably since it was originally out, and maybe I would appreciate it more. Yeah, it's been a long time.
What's yours?
And I would say, honestly, although I haven't revisited these movies in a while, I would say probably his first film, actually, Hard Eight or Sydney, which was his original title, which is the only one of the movies that I didn't see sort of in its original release. I went back and saw it later. And I think this goes back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, that it's the least ambitious movie that he's made, I think. It's a small character study in a way like The Master, but it doesn't feel like it's trying to make a very large statement beyond just here's what these characters are like and here's kind of a moment in their lives. Mm-hmm. And it's really well acted. I think it's the best acting I've ever seen from Gwyneth Paltrow. And it's just, I remember kind of coming out of it thinking, I really enjoyed it. It really engrossed me. I really cared about these characters. Whereas I think a lot of his other movies, I come out thinking, the guy is really talented. He really crafts things really well. But on an emotional level, it doesn't always reach me. And that, to me, was the one that reached me most. But
I think it's definitely one of his more movies.
Right.
He started kind of playing with the form, fast forward to where we're getting now with The Master. To see that movie, you could tell it's like he's going, all right, it's my first outing, feature film director. I got to make a movie, not some, like
big personal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Big personal diatribe or something cathartic I need to put myself through as a filmmaker, but just tell a good story with great characters and great actors, in a way that's not going to, confuse or frustrate people.
Right.
So I do. I have a special place for Hard Eight as well. It's been a while as well that I've seen that, but it's definitely worth a revisit or a first-time visit if you guys haven't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, that's certainly the least known of his films, and I think if people have seen Boogie Nights and Magnolia and Punch Drunk Love and all of these ones that are held up as these huge, I mean, especially I think Boogie Nights is held up as this sort of canonical thing at this point, and There Will Be Blood as well. It's really worthwhile to go back and see that early film. And I don't think this is going to happen, but I would love to see him do something on a smaller scale again. But it seems like he is on that sort of trajectory towards larger, more obtuse
novel, right?
Yeah. Oh, you're right. You're right. And that's right. That's. I mean, you can't really get much more grandiose and obtuse than a Pynchon novel.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, I think yeah, that's his official.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, I can't remember the title,
Inherent
but
Inherent Vice.
I there you go. Yeah. You're.
I have no. I don't know that I actually haven't read any of his books. I don't even know what the book is about. All I know is that that's his next movie. I think it takes place in the '60s.
Oh, is it the one with like a surf shop or something like that? I want to say. Man, I know we're totally misinformed here.
I don't read. I watch movies.
I've read one Pynchon, a very short Pynchon novel, and I think his larger works are a little more than I could.
Is it unfilmable? Like, would this be something that you'd look at?
I think it's it's likely that it is something that you would consider that way. I mean, not that, but there are a lot of unfilmable novels that, or supposedly unfilmable novels that end up being made into really great movies because the filmmakers behind those movies have really original ideas for how to approach the material. And so I think it's absolutely possible that if this novel is that way, that Anderson could find the right way to make it into a movie that works.
Because he at least has another writer to bounce off of, right? That's the thing with his previous.
Oh, he's just kind of doing it all himself.
Yeah, kind of doing it all himself. At least here he has another writer, whether it's, you know, he's actually going to be talking to the author or just reading the book.
Yeah, Pynchon is kind of notorious for.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
I mean, he's a recluse. He never gives interviews. He never has been photographed, things like that. I mean, he's kind of the Terrence Malick of novelists. So I don't know how involved he would really be.
Yeah, but at least he has another writer, whether it's in physical form or just with the book.
Right, just a story to kind of start with. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see that. And I think even if I ultimately look at The Master and say this movie doesn't succeed, I still think Anderson is a really fascinating filmmaker, and I'm really curious to see what else he does. And I think he'll go on to make more great, valuable movies in the future.
I think him, along with Tarantino, probably are two greatest American filmmakers. Under 50.
All right.
But, you know,
is Tarantino still under 50?
Just barely. But, yeah. No, I think those two guys are, you know, they sort of represent the new Hollywood.
Right.
You know, back in the 90s when independent film, quote unquote, was sort of becoming big. And the fact that they're still, you know, working as hard as ever and pushing the form as much as they are is great.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think they're definitely, if nothing else, they're two of those guys from the 90s who do continue to push themselves. I mean, you can look at their movies, you look at Tarantino's movies as well, and see this kind of escalation in ambition and style every time. Yeah. Whereas a lot of those other maybe 90s indies directors kind of stayed in their comfort zones for the most part. Right, exactly. Kevin Smith or Robert Rodriguez, who just, I mean, they may be good at what they do, or maybe you don't think they're good at what they do, but they kind of just kept doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely, I would give credit to Anderson for that, is that he's always pushing himself forward to something. And even if it doesn't work, at least he's hungry for something new.
Exactly.
And I appreciate that. And that's definitely something new. So thank you, Roger Tinch, for joining me.
Thank you, Josh Bell.
And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.